360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
Well, good morning. Matt Hepworth filling in for Katie Wolfe one last time. She's back in the chair Monday from 9 a.m, but I've been in the chair all week, so it's only fair we do one thing on a Friday morning, and that is The Week That Was. And joining me in the studio this morning is the CLP's member for Namatjira, Bill Yang. Good morning.
Morning, Matt. Morning, listeners.
The independent member for Goyder, Kezia Purick. Good morning.
Good morning, Maddie.
And Labor's member for Lightcliffe, Natasha Fowles. Good morning.
Great to be with you.
Now, before we get into The Week That Was, if you've been listening to the station this morning, you will know today is the Camp Quality Charity Auction.
Oh.
Now, we've got a lot of items across the day being auctioned off. Now, the 9 o'clock item, Natasha, something that you might be interested in, we are auctioning off this hour. It is a 2019-2020 NTFL Premiership jumper signed by the Nightcliffe Tigers. Now, Tash, you are, of course, the patron of the Nightcliffe Tigers Football Club. Do you want to put an opening bid in on this one?
The mighty Nightcliffe Tigers. Well, that's what happens when your team wins the Premiership again.
Yes.
I do believe I bought this jersey last year at the auction.
It was a little deja vu.
Got it framed and gave it back to the club, and it was exciting. I was up at the sports club last night, and the kids pointed out the trophies in the cabinet. So, yeah, I'd love to place a bid. I think Graham Shaw's already got a bid on me.
I'd heard that there was an opening bid of 400, I think, is what I was told earlier.
So how about
this
I take that up to 500 and we'll try and get some money for Camp Quality, who do a wonderful job supporting Territory families.
Yeah, look, they certainly do. All right, so we've got that Nightcliffe Tigers signed Premiership jersey from all the Premiership players in last year's grand final. The opening bid was of 400. Natasha Files is now at 500. If you'd like to outbid her, you can give reception a call, is where we're taking those phone calls this morning. 8941 9999. So instead of the studio, give reception a call. That's 8941 9999. And as each hour goes on this morning, we will have different items to auction off. A big thanks to all our local businesses and sports club like the Tigers who have donated those this morning. And we'll get more on that across the morning. But let's get into the big issues of the week. And we'll start off with some good news. And we know earlier this week, the Northern Territory officially eradicated coronavirus for a second time. It's been 28 days since the last case was cleared. That is the threshold for eradication. Tash, we spoke about this earlier this week. As you said, it's good news, but we don't want to become complacent.
So we've met the clinical definition, which is 28 days, as you just said, Maddie, from the last case recovering. So we've met that clinical definition of eradication. We have been at this point previously, and then we did see more cases of coronavirus. So we mustn't become complacent. It's ever present. We were just chatting in the studio around some of the cases around the world, how people just, there's no symptoms and they have the illness. But I think at this point in time, we should acknowledge our health professionals, the non-government organisations, all of those that have worked to keep our community safe. This health crisis has caused an unprecedented economic crisis. As 2020, you know, moves on the year, none of us, I think, as we look back, it still feels surreal what's happened. But acknowledging the hard work of so many people, and thanks to Territorians that have changed their lives to put us in this position.
Bill, I know you are the debutante on The Week That Was this morning, and I'm sure you'd no doubt be aware that this hour is quite political. But with an issue like this, politics aside, it really is good news, isn't it?
It is. It's great news to see that we're corona-free again. The situation, of course, is always fluid. With so many travellers coming in, we've got to be so concerned about those interstate areas that may pop up as hotspots. And we need to make sure we've got our testing ongoing to keep Territorians safe and to make sure that we don't get the virus in here in the Territory. And certainly if we do, is how we manage it if it does get here.
Kezia, what's the mood like in the rural area? Because I know when we've spoken about this previously, you've said your constituents have probably been some of the most fearful of the virus.
Yeah, they have been. Across the board, you know, age is not a factor, but they are.
Is that your phone?
No, it's not my phone.
No,
it's not mine.
It's not mine.
Bill,
it's
I'm looking
Bill.
At you. Oh, that's strike one, mate. Strike three, and you're out.
Strike one, oh dear. Look, I'm worried we're going to get thrown in the sin bin.
And we do know that we've had 60 plus thousand people come in, predominantly from Queensland, but from everywhere. And I think the travellers who come in are pretty. You know, honest and, you know, say where they've come from. But I think, and it's NT Police that are doing all the hard work, the people who want to break the law or tell fibs that, you know, they've come from a hotspot when they haven't come from a hotspot, that's where I think we need to be very vigilant on our borders. And I know NT Police and other parties are doing that. And that gives people comfort. But they are still, you know, abiding by, you know, the don't get too close rule and washing hands. And, you know, that can only be a good thing. But interestingly, one of my primary schools out there, I was there last week, and they said since the borders open, the incident of colds and flus and coffee and sniffles has risen in the school. They pretty much had nothing while the borders were closed, as did the community.
Yeah.
But quite an incident of people getting flus. And that could be because good grandmas and grandpas coming to town. So I think they still can harbour, you know, like you say, asymptomatic. So we've got to maintain vigilance, like we've all said.
Natasha, I guess the next big step is that the Northern Territory government will remove that hotspot from Sydney from October 9. Is that? I think that was announced last Friday. No changes on that at this stage.
So what we did is remembering back to June, and we were coming under a lot of pressure, particularly from the CLP, to open our borders, and we said that we would do them within replication cycles. And in that time, Victoria blew up, and then we did subsequently see Sydney metropolitan area have a number of cases. The Chief Health Officer has advised us that he's confident that in 28 days from last Friday, on the 9th of October, all things going the way they are, that it will be safe to open up to that Sydney metropolitan area, which will allow people to see family and friends, and also the opportunity for tourists to come up to the Territory and, you know, spend in our communities. So we're watching that very closely. We're confident that Sydney has got their testing, but also their contact tracing, so that if they do see cases, and what we're seeing with those cases, they tend to be little clusters rather than that widespread community transmission that we saw in Victoria. But we mustn't become complacent. We all must take personal responsibility. If you're not feeling great, just reach out for a test. 2,500 tests is the average in the Territory each week. It's pretty straightforward to get that test. Stay at home if you're not feeling well. So these are just the simple things, that hand hygiene, the physical distancing, that we can keep our community safe from coronavirus.
Bill, what's the mood like in Central Australia? I know we've spoken on this program a couple of times before to the guys at the Mutajulu Aboriginal Corporation, and they've been really hesitant about the borders opening. In fact, earlier this year, we saw a situation where a flight was coming in from Brisbane, I think, where they'd actually blockaded entry to the park. Is there still that heightened level of fear, or are things starting to... is the mood a little bit more relaxed, given that we saw that news about eradication earlier this week?
Oh, I think the mood down in certainly around Ayers Rock and Mutajulu and Yulara, I think the mood has changed down there quite a bit. There was a lot of fear amongst that community because of those clusters and the outbreaks in some of those areas of Brisbane, and for those planes coming in. The people quite fearful. I think the work that's been done so far to make sure that we're testing and keeping an eye on those people coming in from interstate has certainly alleviated some of those fears. So hopefully we can start to see an increase of tourism back into that region. Certainly help the economy down there. And it's been nice to see that increase in visitors into Central Australia, because it's certainly helping business down there as well.
Absolutely. It is very good news, but we are, of course, one that we're watching very closely.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
19 past nine, Matt Hepworth with you this morning as we do The Week That Was with the CLP's member for Namatjira, Bill Yan, Labor's member for Nightcliff, Natasha Files, and the independent member for Goyder, Kezia Purick. A big story that came through this week, guys, was the Northern Territory's Beetaloo Basin flagged in the federal government's new JobMaker plan. The plan has a primary focus on gas to both create jobs and secure energy for the East Coast. The Territory's Beetaloo Basin is one of five key gas basins where the government will invest $28 million. I spoke with Federal Energy Minister Angus Taylor earlier this week. He said the Northern Territory is enormously important in this announcement, and that the Beetaloo Basin is one of the most prospective regions in the world for future gas supply. The news has been welcomed by most, but of course there are some still concerned about the environmental risks and whether or not gas is economically viable. Natasha, we might start with you again. Is this announcement by the federal government something that the Territory Labor government welcomes?
So we have always acknowledged that the potential of the Beetaloo Basin. This is very early stages, but what's important is that we continue to implement the recommendations of that independent scientific inquiry. We accepted the findings of that report, a high-level scientific panel that looked at the issue of hydraulic fracturing in the Northern Territory, and so we need to make sure we balance that, protecting our environment, particularly our water. But we are very conscious that there is the opportunity for jobs for Territorians. We do need to respect the rights of traditional owners, and that's why we have no-go zones. So if the traditional owners don't want to participate, they have that absolute ability. I think it was interesting, Maddie, during the week, looking at the Prime Minister, he was talking about energy, but also talking about renewables and carbon capturing. And that was an interesting to see from the federal Liberal government. who previously perhaps had not talked about some of those things. So for us, it's about diversifying our economy. We know the potential within renewables. We've got the Sun Cable project, really exciting, the battery for Darwin and Catherine so that we can back up our electricity grid. So we've certainly always recognised that potential, but it's about making sure that we look after our environment and particularly recognise the rights of traditional owners.
How do you strike that balance, given that now it seems the federal government are really invested in gas, and we saw going into the election you had some big commitments about renewables into 2030 and 2050. Given the federal government's really focusing on gas at the moment and the emissions associated with fracking, are you still confident you can make that balance and meet those targets?
So all of the recommendations have to be implemented. One of those recommendations is around carbon emissions, and we've acknowledged that we can't do that alone, that we would need other Australian jurisdictions, the Commonwealth government, to make us meet that commitment, and we're very much committed to every single commitment. We will do this properly. And the renewables, there's so many options, and we're seeing that economically. We're seeing industry, we're seeing big companies shift across to those renewables. So whether, you know, governments want to, the traction's there, community are on board, and we're really seeing renewables as a way of the future in terms of generation for electricity and therefore the industries that can flow.
You know, it's good that the Prime Minister's, you know, putting it on the agenda in regards to the Beetaloo Basin, and there's no doubt it's massive. It's absolutely massive. You know, I think it's 300 trillion cubic metres of gas potentially is there when you compare to Black Tip, which supplies power to the Northern Territory. Theirs is 1 trillion cubic feet, so that gives it the perspective. And yes, it will be servicing the eastern seaboard, and it can do so for hundreds of years if, you know, it's done properly and the pipelines are all constructed. But the one thing I would say is that this has to be driven by the Northern Territory government, and it's good, and I know industry was very happy when the resources and the agricultural portfolio is now resting with the Deputy Chief Minister, as it should be. Because it's the resources industry and everything associated with the resources industry, which I put renewables in there as well, is up with a deputy chief minister, if not even the chief minister would be ideal. But it has to drive this, and it also has to get the department and the approval process better. We are lagging behind jurisdictions like Western Australia, where it can take sort of something up to about 1 year to get all the approvals through for a project, whereas it's taking up to 3 years here in the Northern Territory. So whilst we have the resources and we know we're geologically blessed, we have to have our processes and our regulation better, such that we can compete and compete well and get the companies to come here and invest their money. Yes, we've got all the biggies here doing their thing like Santos and Centralian Petroleum, but we want to get the other companies to come in or to form partnerships or to get the pipeline companies, because the Santoses of this world don't build the pipelines. You know, you've got to attract those other companies in. And you know, renewables are good and fine, but renewables can be expensive. But in doing renewables, you still need hard rock mining. You know, those things still have to be built by some minerals. So you can't just say, we're going to do away with all the hard rock mining, because it's just ridiculous. It's not realistic. So you've got to find a balance of all these kinds of energy sources.
Bill, what was your reaction to this news earlier this week?
You know, it's great to see the Feds come out and support the Territory in Beetaloo Basin. Look, the Gunner government had the moratorium whilst we were doing the PEPA review. We've got the results of that review now and the 130 recommendations, and I said we all support those recommendations. We have to ensure that any onshore gas is done safely. We need to protect our environment and protect our water. That's key.
And the workers.
That's right.
People just talk about environmental, you know, good sound environmental management, but you have to have good management for the people. I mean, I would think that was number one priority.
And Kezia's right in what she says, is that renewables are fine.
Kezia's always right.
Thanks, Natasha.
But we said we need our renewables, but we can't bring the renewables on immediately. The gas is there. The gas is going to help the economic recovery of the Territory. So we need to fast-track this. I said, we've got the recommendations now. The government needs to get on board and, as Kezia said, get rid of some of that red tape, start working with those organisations to start the process going, create those jobs, create some economic wealth here for the Territory, and then once we get that, the pipelines will come along and there's more jobs and more wealth for the Territory. So and then we can bring the renewables online. We can't do it straight away. There's always going to be a gap between when we can get the renewables online, the solar, the batteries and everything else. We need to plug that gap in the meantime, and gas is a great opportunity for the Territory and Territorians.
With respect, Bill, I think the renewables, they are online. They're racing ahead, and that's why that Darwin-Catherine battery is so important, because that will provide that backup. Renewables are leaping ahead very quickly, and we can't miss out on that opportunity. And so for us, it's it's really important to invest in those renewables. It's what the community wants, and it's what should be done.
I'm no expert in this space, but I know one of the greatest criticisms is that we can have all these renewables and we've got the resources, the sun and the wind to do it quite easily, but it's the infrastructure in putting it into the grid.
And that's where the expense can come from.
Yeah. I mean, Natasha, like, obviously the government are investing into renewables a lot at the moment, but do they also, is part of that making sure that it can go into the grid?
So that's why the Darwin-Katherine battery is so important, because that will stabilise the system. So Territorians have spoken. You look around the rooftops, you look at, you know, local shopping centres, they're covered in solar. We've shifted the scheme to encourage more people. That battery technology is racing ahead, and that's important. And so we've shifted the scheme where people can get solar and a battery for their own house and to help stabilise that grid. But that Darwin-Katherine battery that will come online, which stabilises the system more generally, is really important. It's in a part of that. But the shift to renewables has happened, and we need to make sure that the Northern Territory benefits from that, because our climate is ideal.
We've got a text here from Eddie, and if you do want to text through 0418 957 369, it says, "Hi Matt, could you please ask Natasha what plans there are for the disposal of failed solar panels?"
This is a really important
Thanks, Eddie. That's a big issue.
We've seen some really cheap products come in, and people, you know, come from a good place and they'll put it on their roofs, and then 5 or 7 years later, it's defunct. It's not working. And so you're actually having to put that into land waste. Mm. So we do need to make sure that we have quality in the solar systems that come in. And then also, once they do reach the end of their lifespan, that those components can be recycled, reused, and that we're not seeing, you know, something that is designed to care for our environment actually costing more of an impact on it.
Do we have facilities to reuse and recycle them at the moment, or are they just going straight to landfill?
So there's national standards that are in place. Recycling is complex. We saw a shift in Australia where we can't send our recyclable products overseas. So there's a real opportunity for the Northern Territory. The Territory has about 67 million tonnes of waste each year, I understand, about 1% of Australia's. But there is that commercial opportunity around recycling and pulling components down. And that's something that Minister Lawler, under her portfolio, has done work on, and I think is an opportunity for the Territory going forward in terms of a commercial industry of recycling.
It is actually a very good point that fellow has raised, because this is a big issue for our country that hasn't actually been addressed yet.
Mm.
We actually haven't had this conversation about how are we going to recycle or dispose of used solar panels. Clearly there's lots of minerals in there that can be extracted.
Batteries have a lifespan too. Difficult to recycle, unfortunately.
You've got to have the technology to actually withdraw all the various minerals and then recycle them. So it does present opportunities for some businesses, whether there's existing businesses down south, I'm not sure, but it does present an opportunity for a businesses in the Northern Territory into the future.
Mm. I'm questioning myself on that 67 million, but it's 67 million something now, Maddie.
Probably more.
But I remember looking into this, you know, just a few weeks back, and it's 1% of Australia's, you know, gross waste.
Yeah.
But there's a real commercial opportunity for the Territory there, I believe, in terms of recycling.
Yeah, I know we spoke with a Katherine resident earlier this week regarding the big Katherine tyre fire that was around 12 months ago, but there was some, EPA and council came to an agreement there. One Katherine resident said, well, you know, that's another big issue of, you know, tons of tyres going to landfill.
It's a huge issue.
There's another gap in the Territory there at the moment that said, well, there's nothing we can do with it here. I believe other jurisdictions have facilities where they can, you know, reuse it, recycle it. But here in the Territory, you know, we've got no options. And I guess there's a gap in the market there as we look at, you know, reducing our environmental footprint. We've also got to look at, you know, these other ones as well.
And there's real innovation. Oh, sorry, Kizzy. You can use the tyre products now in road fill and park benches.
It also, because if you want to get rid of waste tyres or use tyres, you have to pay to take them to the dump, and then that's fine. But I see a lot of trucks going down the highway. As soon as I see an unmarked truck on the highway with a thing full of tyres, they go and dump them in the bush. I've come across them in the bush, you know, and it's hard to catch them, but unless you sort of follow them, and they're just dumping them in the bush because they don't want to pay for the fee to take them to the dump. So, you know, that has to be managed as well. It's really hard because I've come across them in all through the rural area.
It's a shame.
But having said that, there's also a lot of dodgy building contractor concrete kind of people, because you come across big piles of waste concrete in the bush and building materials. So,
like a detective this morning.
Oh, I know.
I was going to say, I'd be scared if you were tracking me down, mate. I would quickly turn around and do the right thing.
Well, I did follow a truck once, and yeah, it did dump stuff illegally way down town end roadway, and the police got onto it. But, you know, we just got to stop that kind of stuff because
there's a business in Alice Springs that actually recycles tyres. So.
There is. Okay.
Yeah, no, he was shredding them and they said making products. They use
like mats and things.
Yeah, mats in school grounds and things like that, and in the mall in Alice Springs around trees so that it doesn't restrict the trees and it's nice and soft. But small market, and of course, restricted to what we can do in Alice Springs is. And I said, I remember looking at opportunities years ago for what we could do across the territory.
Especially the ones, what do you call the tyres with all the metal in them? You know, that makes it hard to recycle. Yeah, it makes it hard to recycle.
We're going to take a short break. Before we do, Natasha, you've been outbid on the on the Guernsey.
Thank goodness, she says.
Someone's outbid Natasha Files for the Nightcliff Tigers signed 2019-2020 NTFL Premiership footy jumper. The bid currently sits at $750.
Oh, just outbid, knocked out of the water.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Absolutely
they
smoked.
Clearly are a Tigers fan. Mind you, there's lots of Tigers fans out there.
Yeah. Now, do you want to go for a higher bid? Or
I might have to think about that.
Maybe consult with the team.
Seriously, that person seriously wants it. They've gone up.
Yes, of course, if you've just joined us, we are...
It's a high-quality product, the Nightcliff Tigers.
Yes, we are also in the week that was, but we're also doing the Camp Quality Charity Auction. Now, you've got until 10 o'clock if you want to bid on that item. It is the Nightcliff Tigers signed 2019-2020 NTFL Premier Footy Ship Jumper. Bid's currently at $750. If you want to top that...
I'll go $800.
Bidder at $750 has been outbid to $800. If you want to outbid Natasha, give the guys at reception a call. 8941-9999. You've got until 10 o'clock.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Matt Hepworth with you this morning as we do The Week That Was with Bill Yan, Natasha Files and Kezia Purick. We are, of course, also in conjunction with the Camp Quality Charity Auction this morning. This hour up for grabs is the Nightcliff Tigers signed 2019-2020 NTFL Premiership Jumper. Natasha, I think we started the bidding at $400. I think you went up to $500. Mm. It then went up to $750. Now, you've taken the bidding back to $800, so it's $800 at the moment. And we had a text come in a short time ago from Barry, and it says, I hope Natasha is bidding with her own money and not taxpayer
funds. Of course she is. I'm bidding with my husband's credit card.
Well, that's completely okay. We'll raise it to $1,000 then.
Poor Paul.
Let's talk about big issues of the week, and all about portfolios. The CLP's turn this time. We know Jared Maley has been elected as the Country Liberal Party's deputy leader. In addition, Josh Burgoyne has been elected as the opposition whip. We are expecting a full shadow portfolio in the coming days.
This afternoon, we just heard.
Yes. This afternoon, Bill. Yeah. Can you give us any insight?
Come on, give us some
exclusives.
I said we determined who our leader and deputy leader and whip was earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Leah and Jared, they get to decide which portfolios they're going to take as the leader and deputy leader. And they're going to make the decisions on who's going to get the shadow portfolios. So they're keeping that pretty tight and pretty close to their chest. And there'll be an announcement probably about 11 o'clock today, we hope, as to who's got the shadow portfolios.
So. Well, make sure you give resources, agriculture and primary industries to someone decent. I'll be on your case. See?
Well, Bill,
government's got the deputy chief minister at the top of the tree with resources and farming.
Kezia, when are you going to sign your portfolios?
I'll just work on everything that's important to the rural area and industry.
Bill, I do want to ask you, though. I know that your background is in corrections. Would you be interested in the shadow portfolios around Attorney General and Justice, something Tash knows well about?
Yes, I used to work with Tash for quite a while. I said she sort of ultimately was my boss for a little bit.
Yes, I guess she would have been.
Look, at this stage, I said, I have knowledge of that, but as part of the larger team, whoever gets that portfolio, I'll be able to assist that person with information in their portfolio and vice versa with the rest of the team. So, look, we've got a pretty wide and diverse group of people within our wing. So whoever gets whatever portfolio, as if we'll be working as a team to support each other. Because it's going to be tough for us. We're a new team, first time in for quite a few of us. Mm. So it's going to be a big learning experience. So I said, as a team, we're going to have to support each other to work on those shadow portfolios.
You know, Maddie, the convention with the CLP has always been, I don't know if it still exists, that the deputy gets to choose their portfolios.
That's right.
Or shadow portfolios.
Did you get to choose yours when you were...
Not exactly, no. I did a little halfway that did. Yep, halfway I did. Yeah. I knew what I didn't want.
No, Leader and Jerry said that they've determined what their portfolios are,
yep,
and the allocations will come out to the rest of the team today. Look, I'll put up the things that I'd like to be involved in, and of course, Leader has disagreed with me, I think. I said I'd love to have...
Off to a flying start there, Bill. Look,
I'd love to have recreational fisheries, but she said, I can't give that to you. I can't give that to you. She said, I'll never see you again.
Yeah. I'm out researching, yes, I'm sure you are, Bill, yes.
Researching.
You touched on an interesting point before, though. 7 out of your 8 team, it's their first time within Northern Territory Parliament. I spoke to Josh Burgoyne yesterday, who's picked up the job as opposition whip, and that in itself is quite a complex role because you do need to know the ins and outs of how our parliamentary system works. How are you feeling about walking into Parliament House? Obviously, being in corrections, you'd have a little bit of understanding of some of the parliamentary process, but, I mean, it's a brand new job with thousands of rules. How are you and the rest of the team feeling stepping into that?
Look, it's quite daunting. We spent some time in the House yesterday going through the rules and standing orders and bits and pieces. And
was that overwhelming?
It's certainly a learning experience, that's for sure. Yeah. I suppose I'm lucky. I worked in the legislative environment for quite some time, so that sort of helps me a little bit.
Yeah.
But still, it's a learning experience. It's going to be for the entire team, learning how to work within those protocols and the rules of the House and working collegiately with all the other players there as well. So, it's going to be a big step.
I'll give you one big tip. Know your standing orders well. If you know your standing orders well, you can then use your standing orders strategically, as was shown last session when your leader, Gazumped Territory Alliance, to seize back opposition status, which was...
I couldn't keep up with who had opposition status for those few days.
In accordance with the standing orders. Know your standing orders well. It's the rule book, and you'll do okay.
I want to ask, because obviously you've been in that speaker's chair for the last parliamentary term as well. When you've got so many new people in the field there in Parliament House, is there a sense of leniency or is the standing orders?
No, hell no.
The standing orders?
Hell no.
Yeah.
I mean, the new members after an election, you know, the Legislative Assembly undertakes a range of briefings and inductions, you know, across the board, not only for, you know, get your payment sorted out for your pay and cars and stuff, but also in regards to the standing committees, the committee system, how that works, you know, the standing orders in the Parliament, the sessional orders, what that means, probably take you through a day in the Parliament, you know, the notice paper, the agenda paper. And it can be a little bit complex, you know, the notice paper working out and then working out the role of government versus what goes on the notice paper. And then, of course, general business day. But probably the biggest challenge, I think, for new members is actually the public speaking component, because a lot of new members rarely come from an environment where they've done public speaking of any kind. And I was interested, I was smiling when you were saying that you've been exposed to some legislative processes. In my previous job, I was with the Minerals Council, and I thought I was pretty good at being exposed to legislative processes and how the rules and things are made. Nah. It's nothing like it. So it will be a steep learning curve.
Yeah.
You know, just the whole processes of first reading, second reading, third reading, you know, tabling orders, you know, understanding the Self-Government Act, the role of that versus how our Parliament operates. So, but look, there's plenty of people there to help. You know, the clerks are always there, and the clerks are the impartial, independent people, and they're probably the best people to go to, apart from your own team.
No, we had some time with the clerks yesterday, and they went through a lot of that sort of stuff and how they can assist. So, it's... look, I'm really looking forward to it.
It is going to be quite daunting. I'll just give you one more tip. One more tip.
Turn a phone off?
No.
Yes.
Sometimes your enemy's not across the chamber. Sometimes your enemy's behind you.
Oh. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Sometimes your best friends are on the other side of the chamber.
Okay. Well, I thought you might have... No. Well, I'll let that one
not
for another day.
Not necessarily on your side. That's all I'm saying.
Tash, you guys have got a few debutantes as well. What's the mood like in the Labor camp ahead of the next 4 years, really?
So it's an enormous responsibility. Territorians are going through a really tough time, as I spoke about earlier, that the coronavirus pandemic is far from over. We need to have that widespread vaccine implemented, and that's clearly some time off. We know the economic impact, but there's a real opportunity for the Territory, and so we're looking forward to getting back into the chamber. There'll be the budget later this year and another budget next May, so significant work there for the Chief Minister and Treasurer, but really important. So for us, it's back to business, and we, you know, obviously the trust that Territorians have placed in us, want to make sure we uphold that.
I guess there is a wider criticism. There's a lot of sceptics that look at politics, excuse me, and they say that, you know, everyone, the elected members, are just in it for themselves. I mean, I guess for the three of you, what would you be your response to that? I know everyone comes in and I think you're all wonderful people with really good intentions, but there are a lot of sceptics out there that say, oh, you know, politicians are just in it for themselves. What would be your response to that?
There will be people, you know, you can't please all of the people all of the time, you know, and there are people out there who will say that and will have that view, and you probably can't change them, so you don't worry about it. You know, it's like trying to convince a greenie that uranium mining's okay. You know, you're never going to win, so don't even try.
Bad analogy, Kezia.
You know,
that's a tough sell.
Don't even waste your time. But I think you just got to do your job the best you can, you know. At the end of the day, it's a job. It's a different job. It's not special. It's different. And you've got to make yourself available for people. If you don't like people much, then you shouldn't be a member of parliament.
You're in the wrong job.
It's really important, to work hard for your community. And so people will come to you with an issue that might be nothing to do with the Northern Territory government. And so it might be a council issue, a federal government issue. Mm-hmm. It might be a personal matter. But I treat every member of the community that they have my ear and give them some guidance and thoughts. Or if we can't help them, you know, try and pass them in the right process. So in terms of it's a difficult job, but at the same time, it's a very rewarding job. And there's some amazing opportunities to really get to know your community at a level that no one else gets to. You know, one minute you'll be at a cricket club presentation, and the next minute you'll be catching up with people at the markets. So it's a really wonderful opportunity.
You have to be all things to all people sometimes, and
it's more a lifestyle than a job.
And it can, you know, there's some things that you just really can't fix, and there might be sad things or something that's happened to a family or whatever. But as Natasha said, it is a bit of a lifestyle, and you have to make the job fit you. You can't sometimes say, oh, well, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, because otherwise you'll just burn yourself out. So you have to make your own path, really, how you're going to go about your job. And, of course, you've got, Bill's got, you know, some remote communities. Have you got many or just
a few?
Yeah,
I've got five remote communities. I think my electorate's about three times the size of Tasmania. So.
Wow.
And then you've got town people, you know.
Yeah, I've got town and rural,
different.
So it's a really complex electorate. But
mine too. I've got Nuneaton, I've got Humpty Doo, and they're completely different.
Yeah, they're on different sides of the highway, aren't they? Different sides of the road, aren't they?
And then you've got Marrakech, you know, like chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
But in serious, you know, you really have to just, like, you have to be in touch. And it's like a lot of jobs, you know. You should never lose sight of where you've come from. It's the people who elected you. And even those who didn't vote for you, you know, you're still there to help them in their need, at the time of need,
I think
if
one
need
thing,
be.
Yeah, we saw in the election that, you know, people voted for their local member. I know politics at times, particularly in Australia, can look very presidential. You know, it's the leader of one party versus the leader of the other party. But I think we've seen in some shock results in different electorates, that it's really about that, you know, the people in your electorate are the ones voting for you. And I think Territorians were quite smart this election in that they saw that it wasn't necessarily presidential. It was, well, if I live in Nightcliff, you know, who are my candidates in Nightcliff? And I think they looked at that quite analytically, as opposed to other elections where I think it's, you know, like the federal election was completely ScoMo v Shorten.
Yep,
and I think people lost sight of whether you were in Solomon or Lingiari. But I think in this election, that's what it's all about, is the people you work for on the ground.
They're very specific. The other thing too, Matt, is it's a, I don't know if it's what you call it, a psychological thing. In uncertain times, people are reluctant to change, which happened to be a bonus for the Labor government, because I had a few people, not in my electorate, but they said, oh, we're not so sure, you know, they're not prepared to risk. So they were senior people, and they said, we're going to, you know, stick with our local member, was Casuarina Way. And so I asked them why, and they just, it was that uncertainty. And we all do it. If we're uncertain about something in our lives, we are reluctant to change because your base is not firm. So I think there was a bit of that in this election. And the other thing I noticed was there was less following of how to vote cards. And I think that goes back to what you're saying. People voted for someone that they wanted. And then, don't worry about the how to vote cards. I actually want that person second. And I picked up a lot of preferences out of Territory Alliance that way. And I think Territory Alliance got some of the first votes because of their anti-fracking or no-fracking stance, then they went back to their normal lives.
But Territorians have always voted for that personal recognition. Our electorates are very small, 5,500 people on the electoral roll. And we saw that through the 80s and 90s, where you had a federal Labor representative in Warren Snowden for the majority of that time, territory-wide, but you saw a CLP government at a local level, and people would say, I'm always a Labor voter, but I really like so-and-so. And so people, there is very much an expectation, but as I said before, it's that lifestyle, and but it's a real privilege to get to know your community on a different level, and so it's a wonderful opportunity as a local member in the Northern Territory, because you do really get those personal relationships, and you know when someone comes to see you and they mention their street, you know where they're talking about. You're not representing a large geographical area,
and you get to,
in the sense
and you get
of a big
to meet
city.
So many people and across so many wide varieties of the community, particularly out in the bush. There's some great people out in the bush. I love it. I actually like being out in the bush, and I prefer being in town. It's great. There's some great people out in the bush.
We're going to take a short break. Before we do, Natasha, you've been outbid again.
Oh, man.
If you've just joined us, we are doing the Camp Quality Charity Auction today. A different auction item each hour. At the moment, we have the Nightcliffe Tigers signed 2019-2020 NTFL Premiership footy jumper. Natasha, it's been going back and forth between you and a mystery bidder. We don't know who it is. You've been outbid again to $950, and I'm told the person counterbidding really wants it.
Oh, so I won this last year, and this is the problem you got, Maddie, when your team wins back-to-back premierships. You got to come in and beat next year.
Never again,
Tigers. Footy training started for the juniors this week, and it was wonderful. There was about 60 under-12s out on Nightcliffe Oval.
Wow.
And it's a wonderful club there. They have that spirit right the way through from the under-10s and 12s, you know, up to the premiership league. So I think I'm going to have to look at another way to support camp quality today.
All right, so our 950 mystery bidder, you are holding on to that. You've got 11 minutes left.
Is it the same bidder?
I think so, yes. Yeah, I'm told that the person that is counterbidding, so it sounds like the same one, really wants it. So if you want to jump on board to get it, you've got 11 minutes to do so. 8941-9999. I'm told, yes, it is the same bidder. So there we go.
Ooh.
Unless you want to take it from this mystery bidder, you've got 10 minutes now. 8941-9999.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Construction.
Matt Hepworth with you this morning, along with doing The Week That Was. We are, of course, doing the Camp Quality Charity Auction. You have 7 minutes left if you want to place a bid on the Nightcliffe Tigers Premiership, signed Premiership Guernsey, I should say. Current bid is at $950. Apparently it's the same bidder that's been outbidding you, Natasha, all morning. It sounds like you might have to eye off another item after 10.
Camp Quality, a wonderful local charity, so I'll have to pick something else out.
I think after 10 Maddie? We might have an outside broadcast package, so we can come and broadcast at your electorate for 3 hours if you want.
I could add to that. To make it more attractive, I could say I will throw in a trailer load of good, healthy manure, but they've got to bring their trailer out. I'll load it for them.
Yep.
So a couple of tonnes. In the past, Chief Minister Michael Gunners bought a trailer load of manure at an auction. He gave it to a school. One of his schools.
Didn't Kate Warden buy it?
Well, she's probably bought another trailer load of manure.
Speak to the guys at Camp Quality on the way out.
If you're bidding
it's an odd item, but I'm sure they might be able to hook up something for you.
Excuse me, everyone wants this fresh organic manure.
Yes.
Yeah, healthy. And that might just make people want to get that Nightcliffe jumper even more.
That Nightcliffe jumper is just
with a load of manure
on its own.
Guys, before we wrap up, I want to talk about an issue that came to hand late yesterday afternoon. Chief Minister Michael Gunner has been caught swearing on live radio. Mr. Gunner made the blunder on ABC Alice Springs during a heated debate about a proposed Aboriginal art gallery. Now, the Chief Minister has since apologised. Look, it's a word we've probably all heard before, but not acceptable on radio, as I can tell you firsthand. Not that I've done it personally on air, but sitting in this chair in radio right now, it's probably a word none of us are going to say this morning.
Hell no.
Quite right,
well,
Maddie.
There's that, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's been a lot of observations. In fact, I think there was Katie contributed to an article written about the Chief's change in his language over the last 6 months, particularly during the election campaign. It's more blokey. It's a bit territory. In some ways, yes, it does reflect the Northern Territory that we're a little bit okay with that looser kind of language. But the criticism is a man in that role probably shouldn't be using that word at all, let alone on radio, where I know that radio station had to apologise profusely, as we would have to as well.
It's a public broadcaster.
It was the public broadcaster. I mean, you know, is this, obviously it's not acceptable on air, is it acceptable from our leaders at all?
Well, at the end of the day, Maddie, we're role models. We're representing the community. We're role models to the community, and our actions represent our values, and that sort of stuff on radio is not acceptable, particularly in it, whether there's young kids or anybody listening at that hour of the day or anyone. There's people that don't like that language and don't accept that language, and we shouldn't be using it, certainly in public. It's just not acceptable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it doesn't matter how frustrated you get with questionings from a media person or you're in a situation.
It was a fiery interview, it was, and I think he got too drawn into it, would be my observation.
But at that level, at the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, he's number two on the precedence list after the administrator, people do look to those people, as Bill said, you know, we're all role models in our different ways. And people do say, think, well, if he can do it, then I can do it. It's the same, sadly, for some of these elite footballers and sports people. They are held up and then people follow them. They idolise them. And if they do something that's sort of a bit untoward, like, well, he did it, mum, so why can't I swear? The Chief Minister said rude words, so, you know. And then, of course, then the mother has to explain, you know, that, no, your father, you can't do that. So I think the Chief Minister just has to have a little rethink about that. I don't get it, this blokey thing or whatever, to change your language. You know, everyone swears, I get that. But there's a time and place for everything, and that wasn't the time or the place. Mm.
The Chief got caught up in the debate around the Alice Springs Town Council. He believed blocking jobs. He was frustrated. It was an unintentional slip, and he apologised afterwards for the language. So, you know, he's acknowledged that that was not his intention and has apologised for what happened.
I listened to the full interview, and it was towards the tail end in the interview, and you know, it was a very fiery interview, and there was a lot of tough questions around coronavirus, quarantine laws, and what, you know, to the Aboriginal Art Gallery as well. I mean, Bill, maybe not so much for you because you're fairly new in this political role, but you guys have both done some tough questions where us journalists can be a royal pain in the butt, and it becomes very combative, and no doubt you'd probably like to call us some names, and it would, the Chief didn't use the word in a way that he was insulting anyone. It was just said in a sentence. I think it's part of the nature of being in politics is that you are going to get those combative kind of interviews, but you can't get too drawn into it, where I think that's where the Chief got to yesterday.
And he acknowledged that he should have slowed down, that it was unintentional, and he's apologised for that.
I mean, he's apologised, and I think we should accept the apology and move on. But I think it's a lesson to all of us. You know, it doesn't matter how it gets tough, or was it the tough gets going? You know, you just got to keep an eye on your language and what you say and when you say it.
But I suppose it's the second time in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Did you do another one?
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago.
Was it with us?
Oh, I'm not
Should
sure.
Should I be checking
but,
the tapes?
There was another word, something ton of work to do.
Oh, yes, yeah, no, that, yeah, see, that seems to be fairly common in the vocab these days.
Yes.
We will have to leave it there. The CLP's member for Namatjira, Bill Yan, I believe you've got a bit of a birthday shout-out before you
go. Yeah, look, I'm up here in Darwin, and I'm away from my daughter. It's her birthday today, so I've got to wish Lauren, my daughter, happy birthday today.
Lauren.
Yeah, yes. And it's tough being away for on a 23rd birthday, but I rang her first thing this morning and wished her a happy birthday, and I'm looking forward to getting home to see her, and of course I've got to take her out for dinner.
Of course you do. Well, the CLP's member for Namatjira, Bill Yan, thank you so much for coming in and joining us for the
week
that was this morning. Independent member for Goyder, Kezia Purick, any final message at all, event?
What's happening in the rural area? Oh, well, there's always the Coolinga markets. They're terrific.
There you go.
Or Fred's Pass markets, whatever they're called.
Yeah, they're both, aren't they?
Yeah. But also there's markets in the Coolinga Shopping Centre on Sunday morning. So, there's always plenty of sport.
Is there mangoes out there, Keisha?
Oh, it's heaps of mangoes. Good. The mango,
I've got orders from my people in my electorate wanting mangoes when I go home.
Half the mango, but there's a lot of them have already started to pick. And I saw the Vanuatu workers. There was these two little mini buses pulled up outside my office yesterday. They weren't coming to see me.
Yeah.
And I thought, they look familiar. Anyway, so they're out and they've gone into the various orchards where they've been allocated. So welcome to the Darwin and welcome to Northern Territory.
Absolutely.
Get picking
the
mangoes.
Labor's member for Nightcliffe, Natasha Files. Anything on for the weekend? Events in the community?
What's that changeover from dry season sports, the cricket and et cetera is concluding and the football's starting?
And rugby union's going to be a wet
season. The presentations
season.
For soccer, but I'm heading out to the Nightcliffe Police Station in a moment with Nicole Maniston, the minister.
The
I know, I've got my RM boots on, but that police station's flying ahead and important asset for our police who keep us safe in our community.
Absolutely. Well, Bill Yan, Kezia Purick, Natasha Files,
thanks,
thank
Maddie.
You all so much for coming in this morning.